Welcome to Head Games, Science, Psychology, and Sports. I'm Dr. Brett Levine, joined as always by Dr. Ben Rosenberg. Ben, are the Buffalo Bills going to win the Super Bowl?
Absolutely not. I do like their – I actually do like their talent, and I think they're going to win tonight. But I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl, no.
Fair enough. We have a we're going to unpack the NBA championship. The playoffs are done. Bubble has wrapped up. We have a champion. It's the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't think that's a surprise to a lot of people. We have one of our favorite guests, one of our favorite friends, cousin TJ at this point, former high school and college basketball player, master's degree in sports admin, former basketball coach, principal, father, children's author, host of the 2% podcast. TJ, what's going on, man?
So, how you guys doing?
All right, man. How are you?
Good. Trying to figure out what exactly I'm going to do with my life now that basketball is not on.
Dude, it's a short break though, hopefully, right? I mean, it's should be training camp right now. So they'll be coming back before we know it after the holidays. Yeah. Early preseason power rankings, Warriors are like number 5 or 6. I think the West is going to be, but we can.
Yeah, but we have to watch football on Christmas, and that's just weird.
Yeah, that is weird. I'll give you that. Usually the Warriors are like demolishing the Clippers on Christmas, and instead we got to watch football.
I think there's more to unpack later about that. I don't know if we want to talk Warriors, but we will get into Lakers, and I think we'll talk a little bit about LeBron and his fourth championship. But I think the first topic is a little bit, it's interesting, and I think it hits home for Ben and I especially, but we brought TJ on because we want to know his take on this. So for better or for worse, the major theme from this year's NBA playoffs was team chemistry. And for better, it was Miami Heat, who I think surprised a lot of people by not only making it to the finals, but taking the heavily favored Lakers to 6 games. And for worse, it was this rebuilt, superstar-laden LA Clippers who blew a 3-1 lead against the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Western Conference semis. So TJ, first question for you, diagnosis for me. Is this really a story about team chemistry for each of these teams?
I think so. And I think that there's something to be said for the way the Clippers went about the season to begin with. First of all, they have so many new pieces, right? I think that the hangovers from last year was maybe Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, but the guys that they relied on, Pat Beverly, but the guys they relied on were pretty new. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Morris. These guys are all new, not only new to the Clippers, they're new to each other, they're new to Doc Rivers, and they went about the season, and remember, they were kind of pacing themselves as if the Western Conference Finals was inevitable. And then Corona hits, right? And so I think they may have had like 4 or 5 games, I don't remember exactly, that the whole team played together, whether it was due to injury, whether it was due to load management. And so Corona hits, and now all that time that you thought that you were going to be able to ramp up wasn't available to you. So then you drop the team in the bubble, and they looked like a team that had never played together before. They just from a basketball perspective, they didn't know each other's strengths. They didn't know each other's weaknesses. They didn't know who wanted the ball where at what time. And it looked terrible, and it translated on both ends of the floor. And I really think that a situation like the bubble actually exacerbates that, because during any other normal season, you have the ability to get away, right? You go home to your wife, your kids, your girlfriend, to your friends, whatever puts you back in a place of normalcy. Well, in the bubble, you are with these guys all the time. You see them at breakfast. You see them at lunch. After the game, y'all take a shower. You're together. And if you don't like each other, or better yet, you don't really even know each other, right? So you don't have a relationship to build on. And so I think that really showed itself in the Clippers, especially a guy like Kawhi, who, if you really think about his career, it comes from organizations of stability. No nonsense. Spurs is, when you think of the Spurs, you probably think of Tim Duncan. Mm-hmm. Tim Duncan is the ultimate stoic, quiet, you know, he'll give a fist pump every now and again. You know, the most emotional person on those teams was, outside of Ginobili, was Greg Popovich. Yeah. All right. And then you go to the Toronto, also all business, right? Fred VanVleet, Kyle
Lowry.
These guys are no nonsense. Then you get to the Clippers, and it's just a band of vagabonds just tackling on the sideline, like Pat Beverly, who probably had more fouls than points. Okay, yeah. You got Lou Williams going to the strip club. You just have stuff like.
Yeah.
And he's just, you can, to me, this is a complete assumption, but I'm looking, Kawhi looked at these guys sometimes like, what are y'all doing? Like, what is this? And then Paul George is now making weird posts on Instagram
and
also hitting threes off the side of the backboard. And it became a thing that there was no, who was the emotional leader for the Clippers?
Yep.
Who was the guy that was going to say, all right, guys, let's bring it together?
It
should have been Kawhi, right? But he's not vocal. So who's their second best player? Paul George? He's not that guy. And so I think that the Clippers already had issues. I don't think they liked each other because they didn't know how to play with each other. And then they were thrown in this vacuum of expectations in the bubble that it was too much for them.
Yeah.
They had no excuse to lose to the Nuggets.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only reason.
Yeah, talent-wise, I think many people are surprised, right? The Nuggets are so top-heavy. Jamal Murray and Jokic are absolute fucking studs. But beneath that, it's just such a drastic drop-off, right? And to see them get upset, especially coming off a 3-1 lead, was surprising. Brett, what does the science have to say about this? Like, what does some of the literature on team chemistry have to kind of – what kind of light can it shed on some of the shortcomings the Clippers might have had?
TJ hit on, I think, some good points of it. He touched on leadership, and I think that's part of roles, which we've talked about before. I think it's also, we should clear up, like, I think, two different definitions of chemistry, because I think to TJ's point, there's like the, it's like the vibe definition of chemistry. You talk about it a lot with like a quarterback and a wide receiver, like Baker Mayfield and last year, people said like they didn't have chemistry, like Baker didn't know exactly the way he runs his routes,
right.
Yeah, that's perfect.
To TJ's point, like a lot of star power and people just kind of running around and not knowing where you're gonna be, and like you know, for this highly collaborative sport like basketball, like you gotta have eyes in the back of your head, like I know where he's gonna be, like Pat's behind me, like I'm gonna make the pass there. So there's that piece of it, but I think That can be, I think, the theme. I think that's part of it. But like what I was hearing, what I was reading too, was just like all the other stuff, the psych stuff, the like teamy stuff, the friendship stuff, that to me really stood out. And we've talked on this show about chemistry. It's a love of mine. It's a love of mine. something that I've studied. And the question is what creates it and what contributes to it. To TJ's point, who's the emotional leader taps into this idea of roles, which is big. And the other thing that that struck me was identity. And I think TJ also was getting on this.
Yeah.
In 2018, 2019, the Clippers are like this scrappy team and they play, you know, they're the Mets. They're like the other team in LA. Like it's not their city. Right.
Yep.
It's always been Lakers, and then they're always the second thought.
Yep.
And last year, it was Pat Beverly as the leader, and he's great for that role and that identity. I can be the leader on a scrappy team.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you add two superstars to that, and suddenly your identity changes.
Yeah.
And the leader on a scrappy team now has to be the leader on a superstar team, and that's very different. That role changes a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I think they kind of knew that. I think either the organization or someone in, like, I met somebody a while ago at Sloan, actually, who did analytics for them. Smart guys. Good analytics team.
Right.
And I think someone cued into it. Ben, I don't know if you remember this, but there was all these billboards for the Clippers around LA.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that it said, streetlights over spotlights. And I think the idea was to tap into this idea of social identity.
Interesting.
That, like, the team is, you know, here we are. It's this, you know, superstar laden team now, but like, we're not going to forget who we are. We're the scrappy team. You know, we represent like the grittiness, you know, the gritty part of LA, the like, this, you know, this is our work ethic. We're not like, you know, our identity is not the Lakers. We're not showing. Right. And we want to keep that identity, even though we've just added two superstar players. Hmm. And it's smart, but I don't think it was working very well.
Yeah.
But because that's not their idea.
And yeah. Paul and
George
then
is not a grit. He's not that guy. He's not a gritty guy.
No.
And Kawhi's kind of weird.
You wouldn't consider him gritty. No, not at all.
Well, I think what's interesting too is like both the superstars they brought in are unquestionably superstars, right? Both the guys are excellent two-way players. Like, these are both top-tier caliber guys, sort of if you're looking at them in a vacuum. But as teammates, as leaders, neither of them comes in with kind of this leadership presence of like, I'm going to mold this team to look like me. So it was sort of a mismatch, like you're saying, Brett, like, here's Pat Bev trying to lead a scrappy group of guys and doing that successfully, but then you can't kind of implement those same principles now that you've added these two superstars who are by default expected to now be the leaders. And that just sort of didn't exactly work.
Right. To TJ's point, it's like, who's the emotional leader on this team? And I think it's the two things we've mentioned. It is identity and it is roles, but it's the interaction of that. It's roles in the identity. Because now suddenly you have to be a leader on a different type of team. And like, you're right. Like, Paul George isn't a gritty guy. I think there was reports that he was depressed in the bubble, probably because he was isolated, probably because he wasn't hanging out with his teammates much. They weren't getting along.
Yeah.
And Kawhi, it's like sort of a quiet dude, but then his teammates are like, oh, he's so talkative in our group chat. Like, dude, this isn't an AOL chat room. I was chatty at 13, telling everybody that I was 16. 16 years old. That to me isn't leadership. I don't know.
No. And it's just like you said, just kind of piggyback on that from a coaching perspective. One thing that makes it easier to coach is if you have an identity, because then you even know how to practice, right? So you can, if a team, as a coach, I used to tell my guys, when people see us on the roster, they should know what they're in for, right? Whether that's pace, whether that's slow pace, whether that's you being scrappy like the Clippers were, whether that's you being really technical, but that guides your practices even. But if you don't have an identity, you're constantly guessing, right? You're constantly saying, okay, push this guy. You're trying to go on this gut feel, but then the politics of the NBA comes in, right? So there's a guy that's playing better than Paul George, and Paul George makes however much he makes a year, and he's Paul George with his own sneaker, right? Yeah. So you have to put him in. You have to play him, even though your gut may be saying, this guy is stinking it up, or why, or whoever you don't ever know who the momentum changer is. I think the guy that it affected the most, the bubble, was Lou Williams. Because Williams had a defined role his whole life.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to come in and I'm going to score.
Fill it.
Yeah.
They needed him to do other things because everybody's constantly figuring out what it is that I'm supposed to be doing. And so it's like knowing your kids, right? So if you know somebody, like, let's say like Mark, like the Morris twin that was doing the stuff with Luka, and it's like, if you know him, you know what he's trying to do. Right. So you can kind of reel him in. It's like the Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman thing. But if you don't know him, like if you're Kawhi, you're Paul George, you're like, dude, stop.
Right.
You know, even though that's getting him going, you may be in the back of your mind thinking, dog, you are messing us up by getting these texts. Right. It's stupid. Now Luka's scoring 47. And you don't have to guard him. I do. And it becomes a clash as opposed as an energizer. Or, you know, the Pat Bev antics. It's cool when you know what to expect. Like, this is just Pat being Pat. All right, we get it. You know, we're ready to go now.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you're Kawhi and PG, you're like, what are you doing? You know, you have 0 points, 4 assists, 3 fouls, and you're diving and clapping, yelling and screaming. Like, this is annoying. And so those things that may be annoyances to people who don't know, right, may actually have been triggers for something good last year. But this is something completely different. And then you can see Doc almost puzzled half the time on the side. He don't even know how to talk to these guys. Everybody that he's playing out of his – how you know it was like that was in basketball, the higher the level of game, the shorter the rotation.
Yeah.
There were times they were playing 10 guys against the Nuggets. And that, you can't do that. Yeah. You don't even know. Like, you got to have a rotation that you say, we're going to live and die with this crew. But he didn't even know who was going to bring what at what point.
Right. So, yeah. I guess the I think follow-up and corollary to a lot of this stuff with the Clippers is Doc gets canned, right? Doc's gone. They mutually part ways or whatever the fuck they said, but Doc gets canned. So, what is the take there? Like, what is Doc's role to play in all of this? Like, you've been a coach, TJ, you've been a player. Like, can he serve as a focal point of that cohesion? Like, was there something more you think he could have done? Like, what role does Doc play?
Well, if you remember, Doc was the GM at one point as well.
True. And yeah.
So when he was stripped of those duties, he was kind of had to play with what he was given. And every coach, it doesn't matter who you are, you have your guys. And not necessarily the names, but they're your kind of guys.
Hmm.
Right. And I'm not sure that Doc is a superstar coach.
Ooh, interesting.
That's really hard to do. Like, Phil Jackson in his hey, was a superstar coach, right? Sure. I'm not sure Phil Jackson would have done as well with guys with the Heat team this year.
Right.
So there's different levels of coaches, right? Like, there's program builders, and then there's championship coaches, okay? And then there's coaches who can make teams better, and then there's coaches who can take great talent and make that a championship team. They're just different levels of coaches. Mm-hmm. And Doc, as good as he is, I love Doc to death. I'm not sure that he's a superstar coach because he needs guys that he can sell the dream to.
Hmm.
He needs Tony Allen, right? He needs Big Baby Davis.
Wow.
He needs Kevin Garnett, who's a superstar, but he's like the most anti – him and Rasheed Wallace are similar.
Yeah.
But like anti-superstar superstar.
Totally.
Yeah. Right? That's what he needs. Yeah. He needs guys who are going to do that kind of stuff. He needs guys that are delusional, like Paul Pierce. You only knew Paul Pierce was – the reason why Paul Pierce was so good, you can see it now, is because he's delusional, right?
The truth! Yeah.
He's slow. He ain't really have too much wiggle in his game. But he thought, if I get here,
yeah,
I'm going to make this shot. And so Doc, you know, because Doc was a scrapper.
Yeah.
He coached that. But if you have prima donnas, guys, you got to, you know, Doc, I'm sure in his heart of hearts, hates load management.
Hmm.
But he had to. He had to tell the company fine. And I think that, again, he didn't have the 82 games in the 6 or 7 months to get used to it. Mm-hmm. And as he was ramping it up, it shut down.
Yeah.
And now he's having to start over because you don't know what the hell they're doing at the house. With that team, you have no idea what they're doing. Reggie Jackson, come on. Reggie Jackson was so stiff in the bubble, man. Like, I've never seen point guards run with their back straight up. And he looked like he never hooped before. And this guy, remember, at one point, Reggie Jackson was making more money than John Wall.
Got paid, yeah, man. Yeah.
So I think that Doc, it's easier to fire the coach than to fire the players.
Yeah.
Problem is, he went to 76ers, which can be a good fit or it can be a disaster.
Right.
Because now he's going to have to sell the dream to Joel Embiid.
Dude, talk about team chemistry and mismatch between kind of the coach's type of guy and the personnel that he's given, in that case, inheriting. So,
yep.
So I think Doc tried. I honestly think he gave good effort, but I think that the mutual part of it was them saying, we're going to go in another direction, and him saying, thank God.
Yeah. Interesting.
TJ, I think you make a good point because you put the coach in that concept of roles as well, that there are role-based coaches that add to that chemistry. I've got a caveat to that, and I want to, we can talk about this guy, but I want to talk about the team. How about Spoelstra and how about the Heat? Because Spoelstra seems to have done it all. He's a superstar coach and he's a builder and he fits a lot of those roles.
It's true.
So I guess the counter to everything that we saw with the Clippers, how about the Heat, man? Ben, why don't you start us off? Like, what do you think? What's your takeaway in terms of chemistry with the Heat? What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, two things. One, just quick point on the Heat. I think the player that gained the most, and this is not going to be a novel take, but the player that gained the most from the bubble has to be Jimmy Butler, right? Like, going in, he's kind of looked at as this sort of selfish teammate who fights his way out of these situations he doesn't want to be in. He ends up in Miami. And possibly what helps turn things around for him, and we're going to talk kind of more about this when we get to LeBron later on, is the culture that's set up in Miami is this really deeply ingrained winning kind of habit culture it starts with Pat Riley, obviously, at the top, but, you know, clearly comes down through Spo. And, I mean, it's just, it's obvious the kind of way that they go about their business and kind of build that into everything they do, right? To the counter to the Clippers is the Heat, which has these guys that clearly do like each other and clearly have spent time together building those kind of roles out and building that kind of rapport together. And Jimmy became obviously the leader of that group and sort of helping to implement those habits, what a lot of sports commentators, bloviators call championship habits. But I think that's a real thing, right? Like, there is a real difference in a habitual behavior that is unconscious that you enact without having to consciously make a decision, right? These championship habits, guys are just able to go a certain direction with each other because they've practiced it before, they've ingrained it. Whereas if you're having to make a decision about, well, I'm going to go to the strip club or I'm going to go hang out with my team and get up some extra shots, if you have to consciously make the choice, the titties might win out, right? But if you're engaging in a more kind of habitual, unconscious behavior that you've enacted before, you're going to go the kind of correct route. And so I think that culture is just so deeply ingrained in what the Heat do. And it's evidenced by the different groups that they've had success with.
Yeah.
So, and those are all great points. So if we're talking about chemistry, and, you know, culture will be like the standard variable, that it doesn't matter what everything else is going on. This is win, lose, or draw. This is how we do things. And you know that coming in. And so when it comes to going to the strip club or going back to the bubble or staying home and getting ready for the bubble, the culture wins because the culture allows you to see the bigger picture, right? Yeah. Culture is not, someone said something in a teacher's professional development one time that almost made my skin crawl. And it was like, well, we're trying to build culture by building relationships. And so, like, when you're a football coach, you don't just run the same plays every game. You study the other team and then you switch your plays. I'm thinking, that's not true. Because the culture is not actually the play calling. The culture is execution, right? Because the playbook is this big anyway, right? It's just so happened that against this team that's bad against the run, we're gonna use this portion, but we're gonna be able to execute that. And so this next team that has corners that are really good, but they bite on pump fakes, we're gonna go slant and goes seven times, and we're gonna run these slant goes every time because we know the law of averages. They may get one pick, they're gonna bite on four of them, so two of them are gonna be touchdowns. That's the culture, and so that's what the Heat do. So the Heat. People forget that Eric Spoelstra was hand-selected by Pat Riley to coach LeBron James, who is historically uncoachable, right? Because only because it's hard to coach a guy. It's like trying to give somebody a gift that has everything. What do you say to him?
Right.
Right? Play harder. He's like,
right.
LeBron don't even have an agent. He just walks in and say, what's the most you can pay me?
Yeah.
Pay me that. Why? Because I'm LeBron, and if I leave, your economy is going to suck, Cleveland. So just pay me whatever you can pay me. It matter of fact, pay J.R. Smith, too. And then pay Tristan Thompson. And pay Matthew Dellavedova. What? Just do what I tell you. Right? But that's the culture where the reason why him and Pat Riley clashed was because LeBron understands his leverage, but Pat Riley understands that I'm the boss.
Yeah.
And what I say, there's nothing, Pat Riley in his heart is a coach. And nothing makes a coach more at ease and nothing says culture like having somebody on the floor that says what you say.
Yes.
And so Spoelstra is Pat Riley on the sideline.
Right.
And they even have things that other teams don't have. Like if you come to camp out of shape, you can't get a jersey until you get into you get your fat percentage to a certain level. And it has nothing to do with you being able to play basketball. It's saying, are you dedicated to your craft? And so Jimmy Butler, whenever, you know, they knew they were coming back to the bubble, he actually called his teammates and said, do y'all have basketball goals? And bought them basketball goals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And created these workouts because Jimmy Butler is the same guy who took Carl Anthony Towns, God bless his soul, and said, I can't play with this guy. Like, I just can't. And as a competitor, there's certain guys that just drive you insane, and they're usually better basketball players.
Yeah.
Because you can always tell a guy and calm him down, but to try to pull something out of a guy is outrageously frustrating. And so Pat Riley in the Heat culture, which is why Udonis has him, keeps a job there. Yeah. Right?
Right.
So he says, I'm going to, this is what to expect. You can either come here and do it or not. It's fine. Yeah. I don't need you. There's a million guys that like to play basketball.
Yeah.
That's the culture of the Heat. And that's again, the bubble exasperated either culture or the lack thereof.
Yep.
And since they were in that bubble, that was perfect for them. Because they look at the Bucks, and the Bucks were coasting, and they said, oh, this is fresh meat. If you see all you want to see, see is them bleed. You see them bleed, it's on.
Yeah. TJ, I'm wondering if you read my notes before the show, because I was thinking very similar things about this, and I'm wondering, I wish I knew more to be able to comment on the relationship between identity and culture. And I think that I'm guessing they're related at some level. And I'm guessing that if the identity that the Heat are building is related to the culture, and it reminds me a lot of the Spurs. Like, it reminds me a lot of that factory. Mm-hmm. And you talk about culture, you got to talk about the Spurs. You talk about building cohesion on that team. It's dinners with the team and expensive wines and like getting together.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's the future for them. I think looking at the Heat in a vacuum, as far as like, again, identity and roles, the Heat have no expectations on them. Unlike the Clippers, who were expected to win and it was like championship or bust, the Heat are like, we're just, you know, we're raw talent. Yeah. We're some weird guys with chips on our shoulders, and we have no expectations. And the roles were pretty clear. You have two clear leaders in Jimmy Buckets and I think Iguodala.
Yeah.
And, and Haslam as well, right? You talk about
emotion. Can't forget UD. Yeah.
Yeah. And Haslam. So compare that to the Clippers, who the identity is like, who are we? We were one thing and then we're another, and no one knows what the roles are. To TJ's point too, like, the major catalyst here in either direction was first COVID, and then it was the bubble. Yeah. And whatever wrong shit that was going on with the Clippers was exacerbated. Mm-hmm. And whatever right shit that was going on with the Heat was also exacerbated.
Yeah. So
for the Clippers, right, you apply pressure to this. Two guys get COVID. Paul George, says he's depressed. Lou Williams leaves the bubble to go to a funeral and then a strip club, which is the natural destination after a funeral.
Sure.
Right? Hey, you got to cheer yourself up, bro.
It's the stages of grief, right? It's the stages of grief. That's the 1A.
It goes grief and then titty bar. Is that stage one and two?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, just making exactly sure. Just making sure. Look, in Lou's defense, and I think we've talked about this before, in Lou's defense, there are chicken wings named after him at Magic City.
Yeah, which means he's there way too often.
There you go. All
right. I mean, everything I've heard about Magic City indicates that it's like a destination. I've never been personally, but I've heard it's a destination.
Sure.
Here's, I think the other go ahead, Brad. Sorry.
I want to finish this up with a quote from Lou Williams and then mention the Heat as well. So the quote from Lou Williams along TJ's point about COVID being this sort of pressure, right, that either helps you or hurts you. He said, chemistry is something you got to build, and I thought we were moving in the right direction at the end of the year before the COVID thing happened.
Look
at the Heat.
Perfect.
Butler, to TJ's point, Butler bought everybody on his team goals, right, when they were on break during isolation and just sort of quarantine, right? Iguodala is talking about diversity of players, personalities. And again, I don't have data to this, but like, to Iguodala's point of all these different personalities, when you need different types of roles, that's easy, right? Yeah. You have guys with chips on their shoulders. You have an identity of just saying like, you have nothing to lose. You have two clear leaders. This quote from Dragic, he said, one of our emphases.
I have no idea. Whenever I can't figure out the plural form, I just try to make it singular in some form or fashion. Just add an A in front of it.
One of our emphases before the playoffs was enjoy the game. Enjoy it. Have that smile on your face. That's what I love to do. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Clippers. And I think TJ's point, like, the pressure just exacerbated it. It just drove it in both directions.
I think the last note, I was just going to say the last comment I think that bears mentioning is that another aspect of culture, and as we're talking about at chemistry, are internal expectations for the team that the team has for themselves, right? And like, there's a lot, litany of research on how important expectations are in our behavior and in our performance. And I think it's another contrast in styles, right? Part of heat culture is the expectation that you are, as TJ said, you're going to perform in a certain way and that we are going to succeed. Now, whether or not our personnel meet that, it doesn't matter. You're expected to succeed. Clippers culture has no reason to believe or expect that they're going to succeed ever, because it's the Clippers first and foremost. So they have to basically do something before that expectation can really be solidified within the culture. And then, as you guys both so eloquently said, that's just exacerbated by being thrown together with guys that you don't like. Those expectations are certainly not going to suddenly skyrocket.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think 2 points, and one, I think will lead to our next discussion about the Lakers. But if you look at the Heat and you look at how they win, and then you look at their personnel and you know their backstories, they are congruent, right? Yeah. So Jimmy Butler was, you know, had to go to Tyler Junior College first from Tomball. My school that I used to coach at is 10 minutes from Tomball, and they ain't hooping there, I promise you. then, you know, you have Tyler Hero who was touted, but he only came from Wisconsin. And I know for me, I didn't think he would be good in the NBA.
No.
But he is. Right?
He gets buckets, dude.
Yeah, Duncan Robinson. Yeah. He had one scholarship going into his senior year, goes D3, wins the national championship or plays the national championship, then goes to Michigan and works his way up. Iguodala, who was, again, touted, but then kind of forgotten. Udonis Haslem, who, if you go look at him play for the Gators, he was a fat boy, right? Like, he had to come up. He didn't get to the NBA to 2 years removed from college. Mm. And these are guys that are on your Kendrick Nunn. Like, Goran Dragic, like, these guys all have stories of grinding. These guys all have stories of saying, I'm happy to be here, but if you let me in the door, it's going to be trouble for you, right? And that's how they attack the game as well.
Yeah.
That's how Pat Riley is. Pat Riley's like, I don't know how to be a GM, man, but I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to just work until I do. That's how Eric Spoelstra is.
Yeah.
I'm from playing at University of Portland, right, or Portland University. I forget. I don't know which one it is, so don't kill me. But works his way by watching. Okay. He wasn't just a video coordinator. He was like a VCR coordinator. That's a whole different thing. Getting DVDs and huddle clips are one thing. Having to go through VCRs and stop and start and man, but he made it, right? When he first got the coach of the Heat, they were like, who?
Yeah,
LeBron is never going to listen to this guy.
Yeah.
But he was scrapping. Yep. You're right. And he figured it out.
That's their identity. And it's easy to fall into roles when you know who the leader is. Like, how many times have you worked somewhere and all these chefs in the kitchen, and it's like, hold on, who's going to finally make the decision, right? Yeah. So when Jimmy Butler comes in, he's the decision maker. And so everybody else can feel comfortable in just doing what they're doing, which is what makes the Lakers so good, right? Which what makes LeBron's teams so good, because LeBron is going to be LeBron. That's why they, if you watch, that's why they struggled their first year with the Heat, because him and D-Wade was like, any other team, LeBron is like, man, give me the ball. I don't care. Yeah. Ain't no plays. Yeah. I'm a dribble until I don't feel like dribbling anymore. And then you make the shot. If not, we're going to get rid of all four of y'all, four new guys, okay? And we're going to roll with Jordan Clarkson for whatever reason. But I think that there's something to be said that culture, which even though Pat Riley and LeBron clash, I think they clash because they're the same guy.
Yep.
Right? Yep. And they're like, I'm the head. I need guys who think like me. If you don't think like me, I don't even really understand where you're coming from. Because Pat, believe it or not, LeBron, even though he had went to a championship, he learned how to win by playing underneath Pat Riley. That's when he learned that. That's that. Remember, we talked about those levels. That's what took him to that level that, okay, I was working hard, but there's other things I can do. Let me put $1 million into my body to make sure I'm ready at all times. So in year 17, I didn't even realize this, that he almost averaged a triple-double.
Yeah.
Man. That's insane.
Man.
Let's take that and run with it. So a good introduction to LeBron, the education with Pat Riley. tying it back to the Heat, I think is a good starting point. And so he wins his fourth championship with his third team. It was one with Cleveland, two with the Heat, and now one with the Lakers.
Right.
So Ben, I'll start with you. Key takeaways, and let me hit with these stats. And Key and TJ mentioned it. So LeBron led all players in the bubble in field goals made and attempted, rebounds, assists, turnovers, double doubles, triple doubles, and plus minus. What's the key takeaway from here? Is LeBron just a really good player, or is he something else?
LeBron is something else. I mean, this is the key takeaway, honestly, is that everybody's now rehashing their GOAT discussion because of LeBron's transcendency, right? Like, I think we were talking off air a little bit about how impressive it is that he's won four titles in three different places. And I really do think that is something to write home about, right? I think that is something that's impressive. But what I think stands out to me about LeBron from this brief bubble stint is his leadership and just the way that, as you said eloquently before, Brett, he's matured in the way that he leads. And I think that a lot of that, as we've said a few times, ties back to his experience with the Heat and with Pat Riley. And like everything I've read about reports of his time with the Heat suggests that that is really where he did a lot of his growing in terms of becoming a leader and sort of being able to set those expectations. And like we talked about before, set his teammates up to have those championship habits, right? He took a guy in Anthony Davis who had been looked at as sort of a sketchy teammate at times, immensely talented, but was he going to step up and perform, right? And very immature. And you can speak to this from a basketball perspective, TJ, but AD clearly performed in the bubble, right? He stepped up, man. He, I think, surprised a lot of people. And I don't know that he does that without LeBron's kind of tutelage and him placing these expectations on him of, we are going to do this and you have no choice about it.
Right. So I think your point, LeBron's leadership has matured along with his game. And I think, like you said, that his maturity really happened after that first year. Because LeBron is a phenom, right? And so everything comes quickly. Once he gets it, it's like it just goes in warp speed. And that's his gift and his curse, because I think that also kind of leads to him when he was younger, at least. Not now anymore, but that's what led to him thinking too much. So his first year in Miami, when he was a bad guy for the first time in his life, he handled it extremely poorly, right? He was like, okay, I'm going to be the bad guy then. And then he averages 19 in the finals and gets outscored by Jason Terry. And people use that as a mark against him. Heck, I've used that as a mark against him. Yeah. And so now when you see his leadership, it's like at that point he thought, wait a minute, I'm LeBron. Like, it doesn't even matter what you say to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm LeBron James, and this wouldn't even be a big deal if I weren't a big deal. So let's just win these championships and get it over with, right? And so I think what that did was that gave him the ability to bring confidence into other guys, right? So you look at a guy like James Jones, who he brought with him wherever he went and won championships with, or a guy, it takes a certain, again, these are roles, right? And LeBron is the leader, he embraces that. So how about we have taco night at my house, right? Y'all houses ain't as big as my house.
So
we're going to come to my house. And whatever, I'm going to take y'all out. Don't worry about it, man. I got the money. I've had $95 million before you was even in grade school. So don't worry about it.
Literally.
No, so seriously. Teammates, because if you think about it, like, LeBron is a vocal leader, unlike what we're saying, the antithesis of Kawhi. So when AD, because AD to me still has weird games where he seems like he's just checked out. Like, he'll just have like 8 and 7 out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you just had 40 last night against the exact same dude, you know? Yeah. So just do what you did.
Yeah.
But LeBron and Rondo, right?
Yeah.
Said, I don't care if you miss. I don't care if you turn it over. You need to play.
Yeah.
So I don't care if the play's even called for me. If you're open, come off this pin down and shoot this three and win the game so we can get out of here. Right. Yeah. That comes from leadership, but that comes from culture, because look at the Lakers roster. They're filled with guys who are used to winning. Yeah. At some level, like AD has a national championship before he played. Rondo has an NBA championship. Caruso had an SEC championship. The Morris twin had three or four Big 12 championships. J.R. Smith, as much fun as we make up, he made a difference, right? Because first of all, he never sat down. I didn't even know he had a jersey on until he took it off in game 6. He was just happy to be there. But the only way he's able to do that is because that culture is there, because we don't have anybody to follow. There's no way that a culture can be created. So he just follows LeBron. And there's no better job in the NBA outside of being a superstar than being LeBron's homeboy. You always want to have a job. You will always.
That's true.
He turned down Carmelo.
Yep.
His real life friend.
Yeah.
Signed J.R. Smith. And why do you think that is? Because Carmelo would have expected to play.
Yeah.
J.R. Smith probably just bought the lead to the bubble.
Yeah. I don't know if you mentioned Danny Green.
Danny Green. Yeah, he has three now.
Yeah.
You mentioned, I think you mentioned Rondo.
Yeah.
LeBron. And I think we should tie this together. Otherwise, Gladdy's going to get upset at us. But we'll bring this home here. So there's some great research here that I think ties together what TJ's mentioned about experience on that team in terms of leadership, but also in terms of previous success. Prior shared success predicts a victory in team competitions. And they looked at baseball, Major League Baseball. They looked at the NBA. They looked at EPL, English Premier League, cricket in the Indian Premier League. And they looked at online multiplayer games like Dota. I think it's called Dota, Defense of the Ancients. And they found that previous relations and shared experiences among team members improved mutual understanding of individual habits, techniques, and abilities, and therefore enhanced team coordination and strategy. This taps into what we were saying earlier, I think, in terms of knowing where that guy is to pass to him.
Yeah.
Knowing the patterns and sort of knowing the rhythm of like where people are going to be. I don't know it well enough to say that it should also get into like that psych piece of it, which is knowing what it takes to win a championship, knowing that call it grit or call it effort or call it whatever, that moxie that it takes to win.
Yeah.
So I think in either way, like this is a nice bridge between what we were talking about earlier and seeing what we saw with the Lakers. Yeah. And how about the Clippers? Like how many players on their team won a championship before? You have Kawhi. He won one with the Spurs and one with the Raptors,
I believe. Mm-hmm. One with the Spurs, yes.
One Spurs, one Raptors. Who else?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of it either. That's something to be said, for sure. Because, again, the culture of the Lakers was LeBron. If you really watch the Lakers huddles, LeBron barely even said in them.
Yeah.
And Frank Vogel, when he was mic'd, he's like for number one, I thought he made great adjustments.
Yeah.
But you don't really have to coach when you have LeBron and AD and Rondo, which Rondo is actually one of the smartest players to ever play the game.
Yeah.
You know? And then he had to find his way. Like you were saying, he, you know, thought he was more than he was. Okay. And had to go through a few bumps in a row before he realized, okay, I know what it takes to win. Let me just do what it takes to win. Because I think Rondo is in year 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And he still looks good. Dwight Howard is in year 15. He still looks good. So that is something to be said. That's the dedication piece that when you have those championship expectations, you have that leadership like LeBron, who already he can quit today and his grandkids are set for life. And if you see him still going hard, you almost have to, right? You can't. Yeah. What's your excuse? And that's just the culture that – and then after basketball, right? So skill is skill. Effort is the performance enhancer, right? You can't really teach anybody to work hard. So after you get to the NBA, everybody's good. Mm-hmm. What else is going to make me follow you, right? Mm-hmm. So then you look at a guy like LeBron who has all these ventures and who's LeBron, the one-name superstar. How do I become that? Right. He can bring me that. Like he can tell me how to branch out. He can tell me how to quote unquote build my brand. Cause as good as Anthony Davis is, he doesn't have a signature shoe. Anthony Davis is a basketball player right now. He's in like one Valvoline commercial or something.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Because he's AD. Or you look at, you just look at guys, even J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith is, again, as much as we make fun of him, he's been in the league for 12 years, I think. So he has enough money to go and do other things if that's what he wants to do. And who better to learn from than LeBron, the guy who fired everybody that was professional and hired his homeboys. And they figured it out and built a billion-dollar empire.
Yeah.
Right? Who had a lifetime – LeBron had a lifetime shoe deal at 25.
Yeah.
His Nike deal ended at 7 years, and they just said, you know what? Let's not even play with it, right? And so that gives him leverage to say, I don't care if y'all like my shoes. I'm going to get shoes that I want to play in.
Yeah.
And if you wear them, you wear them. If you don't, I'm signed for life, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think we would be remiss if we – didn't mention, to sort of close things up, the other kind of broader picture impact of LeBron, which is that he's been such a vocal voice. He's been such a vocal kind of persona in the NBA, headlining the BLM stuff and how big of a deal that has been. That's my other big takeaway from the bubble, that, you know, we're focused mostly on talking about basketball in this particular episode, but that's another huge thing I think that we can take away from this. Like, they literally had Black Lives Matter written on the basketball court as they're playing. They rode in on buses that said Black Lives Matter on them, right? Like, this is really consistent. We've talked about social influences, consistent messaging about something that a lot of these guys really, really care about and have lived experience with. And I think that's just another thing that was really worth mentioning, that this is just another way of getting that important message out there and at least getting people to talk about it, right, and see that this is something they should be taking notice of.
So real quick, Brett, to land this LeBron plane, I think the biggest thing for me, because I'm not what you would consider a LeBron James basketball fan, right? I love what the man has done. He's overachieved in an arena that there was no way for him to overachieve. He was on Sports Illustrated at 16. But yet somehow he surpassed that. But I think the biggest feather in LeBron's leadership, culture bringing cap, was as soon as they won, every single teammate came and hugged him. Every single one. They surrounded him. They jumped on him. And that, you know, that made me have a little feel here in my basketball heart. You know, with all, like, after 17 years, right? 17 years. You got to think. Kyle Kuzma is 25. AD is 27.
Yep.
Haylen Horton Tucker, which is LeBron's teammate, is 19. This guy was not even potty trained when LeBron first played in the NBA. And they look at him, they had his posters on the wall. And now he's a teammate. So he can easily just dismiss him. And I don't think he was hanging with them in the bubble. They were ripping and running, doing the AAU thing. And he's like, man, I need to go home. Bronny tripping. You know, he's making videos. Let's get this over with so I can get home. But I think just to kind of bring it in, I think that culture that we were talking about, that chemistry, all came to fruition and showed when the buzzer rang and all of those guys came and surrounded him and hugged him.
That was it. That was really nice to see. This was good, guys. This was really good. We've solved all the world's problems.
I think so. We always do.
We do. Yeah. Please rate and subscribe where applicable. We appreciate it. TJ, always great having you on. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you guys for having me, as always.
You're on Twitter at TJ Void. You can find us on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Brett Levine. And you can find that guy on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD. Thanks, as always, to our team for editing and putting the show together for today. Sorry, Rented Lips. And thanks for tuning in.